You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When F. Scott Fitzgerald published his short story collection, All the Sad Young Men, in 1930, he could have been considered one himself. Certainly, he was a rather sad 30-year-old. 8 decades later, Keith Gessen has written All the Sad Young Literary Men, about young intellectuals of our time and the troubles that plague them. Mr. Gessen is the editor of the literary magazine N Plus One, and this is his first novel. It's published by Viking. I'm very pleased that it brings him to the show today. Hello.
Hi, thank you.
You were obviously thinking about Fitzgerald when you came up with your title. Could you be considered a sad young literary man yourself?
I've been sad. I've also been exuberant and happy. I think the guys themselves are not sad in the sense of depressed or despondent. They're sad because they've entered a certain historical situation. They've gotten out of college and at a time, the late 90s, that was very exciting. And that seemed to have a lot of promise. And the first thing that happens to them in the book when they get out of college is the election of 2000, the stolen election. And so immediately they're faced with 8 years of...
Well, they didn't know it was 8 years at the time.
They didn't know.
Who knew?
Well, and nonetheless, it was, you know, for me, so to talk about me and these guys... that was profoundly alienating. That was incredibly disappointing. It was not something that I thought could happen in America.
Is that when you got out of college?
I got out of college in 98. Mm-hmm. So it was the peak of the Clinton era. Clinton was unstoppable. He had been impeached, and he'd come out of it. So we thought things were going to work out better.
Well, it's also about people who come out of college with great expectations, and then... it's not so easy. Claire Massoud wrote a novel recently about people who struggle even more mightily than yours. Yours at least gets some things accomplished here.
Yeah, and well, you know, the book for me began when I moved to New York in 98, and I wrote a story about these guys who are sitting around their apartment, and they have an apartment in New York, and it's very exciting to them, and they're wondering what they can do and how they can build a life, a literary life, a life that's going to be true to their ideas and the things that they've been dreaming of for a long time. And they just don't know how to go about it. When I moved to New York 10 years ago, I didn't know. I had no idea how to go about it. I'd gone to a fancy college, and yet I'd somehow managed to get out of it without any practical knowledge of the literary world. And so I had these guys sitting around wondering how to do this thing and wondering if this thing was happening somewhere else.
Do you think that each generation of writers has this kind of grouping, young people who find each other, who have certain things in common and certain things not in common? I mean, when I think back to Fitzgerald, there was Hemingway, there Gertrude Stein, they were hanging out with her in Paris. And I'm sure then there was a time when you had Bellow and Roth and Malamud here in New York and others. I suspect that's part of the whole process of becoming a writer for many writers.
Sure. Not just every generation. I think every 10 minutes there's a group.
There's Shelley and Byron, my staff reminds me.
Yes. Well, there's a group of young people right now sitting in apartments and not just in New York wondering how they're going to make a life for themselves as writers.
And they want to do something big and something historic. You're Jewish. You're born in Russia. Some of the themes of your novel involve Jews and Russians in recent history. One of your characters, Sam, is working on what he hopes will be the first great Zionist epic. You wonder whether that isn't a metaphor for his own struggles.
Well, Sam has this idea that he's going to write a great epic about Israel and the struggles of the Israelis, although he's never been to Israel. He doesn't know Hebrew. His parents were radical secularists. They were Chomskyites. And there's a scene where Sam actually goes to visit a fictionalized Noam Chomsky to get advice from him. And Sam ends up becoming so confused about his own opinions, which are mirrored by two women in his life. And then he goes through a very tough period where he's worried his Zionist epic is not working out, and he starts Googling himself all the time, and his Google starts shrinking.
And this really upsets him. This is something that probably didn't affect F. Scott Fitzgerald or Ernest Hemingway. They didn't have to worry about whether they had fewer Google listings today than they had last week.
They had no Google, and yet, you know, the epigraph to the story is from Henry James, who wrote these wonderful stories in the 1890s about writers and artists, which the 1890s, in a certain reading, is the beginning of the modern age of publicity and sort of mass newspapers. And Henry James was very worried about this, and in one of his notebooks, he had these notebooks where he would jot down ideas for novels and stories, and some of them would come to fruition and some would not. And he had this one jotting where he said, a story about a man who subscribes to an agency for clippings to send him everything that appears about him, and then finds that nothing ever appears, that he never receives any clippings. So this was also, this is an ancient problem for writers.
Another one of your characters is writing a history of the Mensheviks during the Russian Revolution. These are writers who have grand ambitions, even if they're not really ready to handle them. But as important as these men who you're writing about are, I guess the women really play a major role in this book.
They do, and the book has received some criticism. I think it's, in a way, just criticism that the women are not as big a part of the book as they should be. But, you know, the book is about these young men. The women, even when they're very funny and mostly they're more accomplished and certainly more together than these guys, they sort of play the straight man to them. So the guys are behaving ridiculously, and the women are trying to bring them back to earth a bit.
In fact, Ursula Le Guin pointed out in the New York Review of Books
that
your young men are attracted to young women of far more intellectual substance and promise.
That's correct.
Is there, you decided from the start to make this all about men getting together, men who would be attracted to women of high quality. And the women tolerate them to some degree, help them to some degree.
That's right. These men are the men that I know. This is what I know. This is the subject that I know.
Well, it's interesting that, everybody's interested in their names. There's Sam. We mentioned Sam. There's Mark. And then there's Keith. Now, and Sam and Mark are written in third person. Keith is written in the first person. But a number of reviewers have not been 100% sure whether that's because you're Keith and you're really writing about yourself.
To some extent, all of these guys are based on me. But they make different decisions, they go to different places, and they end up doing different things and becoming different people. So,
otherwise, you could have written about one character who was struggling
right.
to be a writer.
And so I gave them all as much of myself as I could spare. And Keith got my name, and he got my background. He's the Russian character. But on the other hand, he's much more serious than I am.
Well, this is something that writers have been doing for a while. When Marcel Proust named his main character Marcel, we wondered, is that Marcel Proust or is that a character who's kind of like Marcel Proust? Or
and I think that's fine for the reader to wonder. When you write autobiographically, the one person that you ought not to spare is yourself. Keith, in particular, does things that might not be believable. And if it helps for people to think that that's me and that therefore those things actually happened, I can live with that.
You're a literary editor. Did that have an effect on your writing? Because this has been something that has been of concern to many people over the years. What happens if you're an editor or if you are a critic and then you go out and you write a book yourself?
In terms
Are you held to a higher standard, do you think?
Oh, maybe a little bit. I've certainly dished it out, and now I'm in the process of taking it in some of the reviews.
You think it's harsher than it might have been if you'd just been some guy nobody ever heard of?
Probably, but that's the bargain. I think what... The real effect of me having done editing and a lot of literary criticism in these years is that it took me much longer to write the book than it would have. And what that did for the book is it extended it over time. So, you know, the book starts in 98 and it ends in 2008. And I was really able and this was – in a way, it's bad for the book because some of the early stories are really – some of the early chapters are really young people chapters, things that I could not possibly have written now and things that I tried to edit and I really couldn't because the person who wrote them was so much younger than I was. At the same time, the fact that it took so long meant that I was able to see these things play out in life a bit and see what happened to those people who were sitting in that apartment in New York.
They were growing older along with you and your friends.
They grew older and, you know, they managed to accomplish some things and they managed to make some decisions about their lives and maybe make some compromises too.
And also their attitudes toward art changes over time, as I guess, as they experience life in different ways. Can I ask you a moment about N plus one? We've been hearing again and again about the dearth of literary magazines and how difficult it is for writers, especially writers of short stories and essays, to get published these days. And yet you've created a successful magazine.
Well, I think it's a very similar thing as to when we got out of college and suddenly everything collapsed. Here we were also got out of college and we were told that literature was over and we're being told it again over and over again. Nobody's going to read books anymore. Nobody is going to buy a magazine that's on paper and that has long essays, long stories. And yet it's not true for me. You know, I'll still buy those things and I'm still interested in those things. And I think there are enough people who are. And so the rumors of the demise of everything on Earth are slightly exaggerated.
Well, if you have how many people in this country now?
300 million.
300 million. If only 10% of them are interested in literature, that's still 30 million people. That's a nice audience to go after. Public radio has lived off of that kind of a thing.
And The New Yorker has 1 million subscribers.
Yeah, the novel also has a rather comedic tone. Is that something that was there all along, or is that something that developed as you look back at the younger Keith Gessen?
No, it's always it's always been satirical. It became as it goes further, it becomes a little bit more serious. But the initial impulse was to satirize these guys.
You think you're going to be following them further, or people like them?
I suspect that I will.
Meanwhile, we have this book, All the Sad Young Literary Men. It's published by Viking. My great thanks to Keith Gessen for being on my show today.
Thank you.